Hey, what's up? This is Bram Kanstein of No Code MVP, and you're listening to the Codeless podcast. I did a lot of stuff with computers and entrepreneurship when I was younger. I forgot that when I was 18, I studied medicine for 2 years, and then I quit. My first 20 projects didn't work out. Startup Stash was now 5 years ago. But before that, I had projects that failed before they even saw the limelight. So you have to do stuff. That's basically the only thing I can do with code is deleting the code. That was also built with Airtable, Card, Zapier. Also to demonstrate you don't need to know how to code to build something valuable. It doesn't have to be a super fancy stack. And then, of course, Twitter. I would pay $50 a month for Twitter.
Hey there, welcome to episode 13. Making this episode put me in a really happy place because it involves a maker and a hero who helped me create my first no-code website. You've probably heard of Bram Kanstein on Product Hunt or Twitter. If you haven't, you might have been living under a rock, but it's okay. We'll get you up to speed here on Codeless. Bram has been involved in a lot of internet projects and is the maker behind the most upvoted project on Product Hunt. Over 20,000 upvotes for Startup Stash. Wow. He also recently launched a project to help people find new ways to generate income from the internet. In these scary times of COVID-19, that's a lot of value. I hope you're keeping safe. I see Bram as a hero not just because he builds businesses on no code, but also because he's an awesome codifier who wants to share his knowledge and experience with makers interested in learning about the process, mindset, and the tools to rapidly build and validate your startup ideas without knowing how to write a single line of code. Honestly, if you're hard-pressed looking for good examples of awesome makers to copy, look no further than Bram. He loves the process of learning with others and building real value. I copy him because his tutorials are super easy and his no-code aesthetic is very clean. Okay, enough of that. You can tell that Bram Kanstein has had a huge impact on me, and I hope you feel the same after this episode. We're going to get a quick intro from Bram and roll right into the interview. Enjoy.
Hey, what's up? My name is Bram Kanstein. I'm currently teaching a course called No Code MVP, where I show people how they can build and validate their startup ideas without knowing or learning how to code. Previously, I created a website called startupstash.com, a curated directory of 400 resources and tools for startups. This, till date, is still the most upvoted product on Product Hunt, and it's been used by over 1 million people.
Hey, Bram, thanks for joining us on Codeless. This is a big deal for me. I know the community is totally excited to be hearing from you. How are you doing today?
Thanks, man. I super appreciate that. Yeah, I'm doing fine. We were actually just talking off mic about the whole Corona situation. So, and I showed you that I'm currently sitting in my bed with my headset and my laptop, which is now my temporary office. It's strange and interesting and frightening sometimes what's going on.
Yeah. How are you guys doing in the Netherlands? How is Amsterdam feeling right now?
So everyone is inside. Everyone is just staying at home. They only go to the grocery store or the doctor, or they are allowed to walk their dog, but that's basically it.
In some pretty bad news, and this is related, I just read something from the New York Times. I think close to 3 million people will have filed for unemployment. So it's going to be a big deal everywhere. Yeah. What are you seeing as an impact from this on not just business, but making no code entrepreneurship?
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting time. So for me, like the course I created, No Code MVP, is mainly focused on obviously people that are not technical, I especially want to reach people in the business space, but I especially want to reach people outside of that business space. And I think those types of people are now the people that are currently getting laid off. Hopefully there will be some stuff implemented where they can get some sort of income. People are talking about the whole universal basic income thing. I think that it's now a super relevant discussion, but I think a lot of people will hopefully get some room and space to breathe and also to think about what's next, what can I do next? And well, hopefully they can discover the powers of no code and all the lean startup stuff and see that they can actually pursue entrepreneurial ideas without being technical before. So I hope that's going to be the case for a lot of people, that they will discover that they can actually do more through the internet than what they knew before. And on the other end, of course, it's super frightening when you lose your job, still have bills to pay, it's still super uncertain. So I hope they will have the mental space to investigate new ways of making money and working on their ideas.
Let's start off with you just introducing yourself. Just tell people who you are and what you're associated with to help set the context.
Yeah, cool. So my name is Bram Kanstein. I'm from Amsterdam, the Netherlands. And I think for the past like 8 to 9 years, I've been working or active in the startup world. This all started when I did a lot of stuff with computers and entrepreneurship when I was younger. I forgot that when I was 18, I studied medicine for 2 years, and then I quit. And eventually I ended up doing what I did when I was younger, stuff with computers and stuff with entrepreneurship. And I think I started my quote unquote career at the Next Web, actually, in Amsterdam. Next Web is one of the biggest tech blogs in the world. And I started with an internship there and eventually also like wrote my final paper of my study about lean startup that was just coming up at that time. Since then, I've basically always been a real practitioner of the whole lean startup methodology. Eventually, I worked for an investor. I also worked for Product Hunt. And at one point I thought, okay, I think I know how I can take an idea from my head, build a product and then launch it. And I used Product Hunt as a platform to launch it. And that product was a Startup Stash, which was a curated directory of resources and tools for startups. And that really blew me away. Like, it went super viral. It's still the most popular product ever on Product Hunt. But that project really showed me that even as a one-man band, if you really understand the value that you're bringing, the people who you're building something for, how to communicate with those people and be embedded in certain communities where all these people are active, that you can reach a lot of people even if you're alone, no funding and no technical skills. I think from that project on, I started going deeper into the methodology of taking an idea out of your head, turning that into a first product, and then figuring out if that is something that you should pursue. And eventually that all like culminated in a course that I recently launched in December called No Code MVP, where I teach people how to build and validate their ideas without knowing or learning how to code. So that's the short version of where I came from and where I'm at.
Nice. I heard something in that history that you presented that kind of stuck out at me. First of all, medicine to startups and entrepreneurship, how come and what did people around you think?
Yeah, when I was younger, I was like always on the computer. We had this dial-up modem, right? Where if someone was on the internet, the other people in the house couldn't use the phone. So I was on the internet all day and my mom would always shout upstairs like, please get off the computer. I need to make a call. And then when she was finished with the call, I just went back on the computer. And back then I already tried out like a lot of new like products and services and read about startups, but I wasn't really aware of the fact that that was an industry or something. So I used Napster, I downloaded songs, I burned CDs, I sold them in school. And I was on Dig, that was made by Kevin Rose, who's well, super, super well known. And but I didn't really see any opportunity in that. Back then when I was 16, I tried to learn how to code. I made a lyrics website where people could find lyrics. But on the other end, I always wanted to be a doctor. So eventually that was the route that I chose. I kind of got stuck within that study, like I had to wait to do exams and whatever. That really got me thinking about, okay, is this something that I want to do? Like being a doctor is awesome, but you have to choose that life, right? And I started doubting if that was a life for me. So eventually I quit. I told my mom that I was quitting, and she's like, okay, what are you going to do now? And I told her, well, I'm going to go to backpacking in Australia. And she's like, yeah, right. And then 3 weeks later, I was on the plane to Australia. This is super cliche, but when you're traveling alone, you have time to think. And I thought, okay, why in the world aren't I doing anything with internet and some entrepreneurial stuff? And then started looking at different types of studies. And I found one in Amsterdam where you basically learned like how to spot trends, how to come up with ideas, how to do marketing, the whole business side. So everything from A to Z, basically. And that's how I ended up doing what apparently I always loved doing when I was younger. And later on, I've talked to a lot of people that eventually also ended up at what they were doing when they were 12, 13, 14, 15 years old. And then it seems like your mind isn't biased before you like really hit puberty or something. You try everything out when you are younger, but you don't stick to stuff. And now you see that more younger kids stick to stuff and they become really successful when they are much, much younger. Like 18 or 19 year olds can be, you know, world famous with their skills. Well, even with gaming, I gamed a lot when I was younger, but yeah, I never saw that as a career opportunity.
So you said a couple of things that I think I really want the listeners to understand. First of all, you had something you were pursuing or you were interested in, which was medicine, but you had to essentially leave the world alone and go by yourself to introspect. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to me one of the reasons you pivoted from medicine was because you wanted to be doing something all the time and you didn't want to have to wait for something else to happen.
Yeah,
that's interesting. Let me ask you this question. You talk about finding the thing you always wanted to do and making sure that you're doing it. But I think we're all doing that. I think the secret is to figure out what that thing is. My question for you is, for you today, it's so easy like to get in your mindset and do what you do. And a lot of people in the same cohort are trying to do that. Let's say you were a doctor today. Yeah. How would you get back to being who you are?
That's an awesome question, man. Yeah. So when I pivoted, I was younger, obviously. So then it's easier, right? No house like now, no kid like now, you know, like all these things. And of course, when you get older, it becomes increasingly more difficult. But there are a few things that I got from people like Gary Vee. So whatever you think of Gary Vee right now, I think I've been watching Gary Vee since I was, I don't know, like years ago when he did the whole wine thing. I think there are a few things where he says, like, when you're doing something now to, for example, pay the bills and you aren't happy with it, you can only now get to a point where you just accept, okay, I'm not happy, but it pays the bills. And you're going to try and find new time. So in the evening from 8 to 12 or 8 to 2 or maybe in the morning if you're a morning person, right? To slowly but surely dive into other subjects, read up, learn new stuff. And so I think eventually there is always time, but you have to like really choose it to adopt the fact that it's not going to be fun for a while. If you want to change something, you're going to be uncomfortable. That's the whole spiel. That's the whole thing, right? Like you are going to be uncomfortable. You have to accept that. And once you start getting results, I don't know, learn new stuff or get to know new people or, you know, do stuff like this, what you're doing, right? It doesn't matter if there's like 10 people listening or 1,000. That's also one of Gary Vaynerchuk's things. One is better than zero. That's the whole thing. Like if you believe that and really truly accept that and every day you keep moving forward, then you can eventually make the transition. And for some people, it takes, I don't know, 3 months. And for other people, it takes 2 years. But that doesn't really matter if you have your whole life right in front of you. So yeah, I hope that's an answer to your question. But when I quit the medicine study, I was like, damn, I just wasted these years. But doesn't make sense to stick with that because that won't help you in your path forward, I think.
Interesting. One thing that I hear is interesting how loss is relatively the same at any age that you are. Just thinking about waste of time or whatnot. So let's move from mindset to execution. So I'm luckily over the hump in no code, even as a newbie, where I'm past the point of lurking and I'm actually like trying to do something about it, right? But here's the thing. Your tutorial was so easy. It was like boiling water. I'd have to be like really hopeless not to get it, right? And after doing your tutorial, within I think 2-3 hours, I built up the website for Codeless. But let me ask you this. There's still this issue of the hump from watching tutorials, reading stuff, being what I call a lurker in no code to actually doing stuff.
Yeah.
Why is that? And what do you say to the lurkers who are listening?
Lurking is the most comfortable thing you can do, right? I mean, if I look at myself, I think I read thousands of blog posts or threads or listen to podcasts and stuff. But let's say you listen to 1,000 podcasts or read 1,000 articles, there's 1,000 things, and that is just too much. You cannot keep all those things in mind all the time. And eventually, I think it boils down to how comfortable are you in failing, quote unquote, right? Like, for example, you're doing the podcast. I don't know how many episodes up until now, or how many listeners, or how you feel about it, or whatever. But you're learning stuff. You created a website. Before this episode, you sent me a document of inspiration for me. You asked me to do stuff. We are communicating through email. Like, all these things are learning points. Like, those are all things that people, I think, are forgetting that you have to do them in order to learn, right? So I think also for me, previous projects, maybe with some projects, I emailed like 1,000 people and 2 people replied. And then you can say, okay, well, that sucked. You learn how to create emails or look up people or like all these things that are attached to a project. So I think you just have to become comfortable with being uncomfortable, right? I mean, that's just the only way. And if you just keep reading and listening and not doing anything, you'll never get to a point where you can make something that eventually works. My first 20 projects didn't work out, and only 2 worked out, and those were in the last 4 or something. So you have to do stuff. So I think that's just it. Just get over it. Actually, this morning I was emailing with a guy and he's like, yeah, I have so many ideas. How do I start? And I just said, yeah, just start. Like, there's no, it doesn't matter. Like, even if you think you failed, your little project is just like one blip in the universe. And then next week, everyone forgot your failure. And then you can move on. So just do it. It doesn't really matter.
It seems so simple, but there's up to or even more than 20 projects you did to get to Startup Stash or any other successful project that you've had. Yeah. I mean, let's just set it up for the lurkers. How long did it take you?
Startup Stash was now 5 years ago. But before that, I had projects that failed before they even saw the limelight. But they all failed at different stages. So my idea was bad, or I pursued the wrong idea, I did too much, or I focused on the wrong things, or I tried to reach out to people, but they were the wrong people, or whatever. So I always try to take like 1 or 2 or maybe 3 lessons from every failed project, like really try to be transparent about what went well. That's, of course, also learning, but you learn more from the no's. Like, when people say no, you shouldn't start an argument, but just say, ask them, okay, why? And then that is the answer, and that's what you take away. And then try to see if you can learn from that. So you also shouldn't expect that you learn tons of amazing things when you fill a project. It's probably 1 or 2 or 3 things. And then write them down or store them in your head somewhere, and then you move on to the next thing. And that's also why it's important to execute on your ideas. Like, if you execute in a fast or consistent way, that's when you're learning. And you learn both ways, right? So let's say your product explodes and your site goes down or whatever, you have to fix that. Or if you have customers and then your site goes down, you have to do customer service all by yourself, whatever. So if you're doing well, you have problems. And if you're doing bad, you also have problems. And that's where you learn.
Oh, wow. That's a good insight. So now that we've spoken for a couple of minutes, I'm sure the lurkers have left this conversation. They've literally stopped listening to the podcast. So now for the serious people that want to build, let's talk about your projects. I know you've done a lot of projects, but walk us on your projects aside from your latest one and just tell us what it is, the problem, solution set it addressed, and what happened to it.
Yeah, I think Startup Stash is the best example, probably. So before I had the idea, I was working at a small investor. So I was helping startups with their product development. And at that time, I discovered Product Hunt pretty early on. And eventually, I got access to the site and I could post stuff. And I got in touch with these people whose products I posted. And they were thanking me, saying thanks for helping us out. We got a lot of exposure and people and like new users or investors that were interested, etc. And so at one point I thought, okay, well, I think I mentioned this in the beginning, like I think I know how to create a product, but what idea should I pursue? And at that point, because I was working with the investor and I was active on Product Hunt, I had a bookmarks list of like tools and resources that I found that I thought could be interesting for the companies that I worked with. So I was already doing that, but it was super private. And I was super strict with what I saved in my bookmarks. So I thought, okay, well, maybe that's a starting point. So I started to look on the internet, like startup tools list or startup resources list. And there wasn't really anything like that out there. So there were several like blog posts, like 10 best tools for marketing or whatever. And there was one website by Steve Blank, who's like a famous author on like business model generation. And he had one page called Startup Tools, which was like an endless scrolling page of, I don't know, hundreds of resources, sometimes with a category, like a bold category in between, but it wasn't searchable. There wasn't a logical like layout and stuff. So I thought, okay, one of the most famous people in the startup world has this, but it can be done better. I saw that something was out there, but it wasn't really in a way that I would personally use it. And there wasn't anything else basically. And then I combined that with my love for like start page directories. So back in the day when I was 15, 16 on the computer, I used to love these websites that had like all these links categorized. And for me, that would always be like a starting point for my internet journey. Yeah, so I combined those three things together and that eventually became the idea. So a curated directory of these resources and tools. And I thought, okay, where do I start? So I thought, okay, before I build this whole thing, I'm just gonna create an Excel sheet. I'm going to write down the categories, but then had to think of the categories. So eventually I followed like the journey of a startup. So you start with an idea. So tools that can help you with idea generation, coming up with a name, buying a domain, getting hosting, etc., all the way down to, I think the last category is something like investor relations or something. So it follows like the journey of a startup. And I think I spent like 8 months or something just building the Excel sheet, rearranging it every time. What type of information should be in a resource, like a title, a tagline, a screenshot, some information, the social links, the link of the website, etc. So it took me like 8 months to really curate the whole thing. So I think in my bookmarks I had like 700 or something, and I eventually went with 400. And the actual creation of the website only took me a month. So most of the work was before anyone even saw it. But during me working on the Excel sheet, I already put up like a landing page with the name. I came up with the name and I had the tagline, a curated directory of resources and tools, and an email capture link. That was basically it. And I put it on beta list and shared it on Twitter or LinkedIn. But I just talked about it like I'm creating this. And then slowly, I just sent previews to the people on the email list and gathered feedback from them and just talked to them about what are you looking for and stuff like that. And eventually created the website, which was basically me hacking away at a WordPress template that I found that was a directory template, but it was aimed at a directory for shops and stuff like that. So I literally went into the code and deleted all the lines that I didn't need, just to make it as minimalistic as possible for myself. That's basically the only thing I can do with code, is deleting the code. Yeah. And I did have some help from some friends to get like proper WordPress hosting and stuff like that. And I think that's also one of the points that we just talked about. Like, when you run into a problem, it's easy to just blast it out there, like, who can help me with X or something, right? Like, who can help me with WordPress hosting? But if you take some time, and that can be, I don't know, 15 minutes or something, to dig for some information that can help you to craft that question more intelligently, then you will also find better people that can actually help you, right? So even when you have no clue, I had no clue about WordPress hosting, whatever, I tried to dive in a little bit to see what are my options or whatever. And in that way, I could ask a better question to people that could potentially help me. And so eventually I launched it through Product Hunt and all these other channels. And it was widely covered by Entrepreneur and Forbes, and a lot of well-known people were tweeting about it. So it was cool. Like, eventually I really got to the point where I wanted to get, which was just helping people with the right resources and tools for that stage in their startup. That's the shorter story, I think. Yeah.
So it appears from what you're saying, at the time, no code wasn't as prevalent as it is, but it essentially was built with code, and you stripped out some code and repurposed it to do what you wanted, correct?
Yeah, well, you could discuss if WordPress is code or no code. I think it's more in the no code corner, but I built the prototype. My prototype was Excel, which is obviously super, super no code. And then I asked one of my developer friends, like, how should I like arrange that Excel list so I can upload it to my WordPress CMS system so that I don't have to copy and paste like all the stuff. So I think I asked him that after 2 months when I already did a bunch of the list. And then he said, no, you have to turn it around. Like, the columns have to be the rows and the rows have to be the columns. Well, I had to do that all by hand, obviously. And those are these little things where you think, okay, I asked the right question, but I asked it pretty late. And that's when you learn, okay, if you take a little bit more time at the beginning to think about, okay, what's the type of system that I want to use? How should I lay out the content and all these things? Like, these are all these little learnings that will stick with you eventually. So I eventually created the prototype in Excel. And then I uploaded it into the CMS of WordPress, and then the site was instantly filled with all my content. So I didn't have to do a lot in that sense.
That's great. So Startup Stash sold, correct?
Yeah. So I ran it for about 2.5 years. And I think I made between like 3 and 5K a month or something with promoted spots and stuff like that. And eventually I thought, okay, this is a cool side business, but if I really want to grow it, I always saw there was like a bigger opportunity, but I don't know, mentally, I wasn't really ready to pursue that. So at one point I was talking to a guy from Israel who was introduced to me by someone else I knew from Twitter. I think this is, again, a fun story about the power of the internet. Yeah. And so I was talking to him about a totally unrelated thing, and he asked me, hey, how's Startup Stash going? And I said, well, it's still going fine and growing, and but maybe I'm actually interested to sell it. And then he asked me, okay, well, what's your price? And then I told him a price, and he was like, okay. And I was like, what? And then, yeah, I sold it in the 5-minute phone call, basically. And yeah, again, that's also an interesting thing. I couldn't really like negotiate anymore because I told him what the price. But it's interesting to then also create the contract, do the whole transfer, like all these things. You learn a lot at every stage of an idea. At that time, I was also running a newsletter called Startup Watching. As you can tell, I'm really into startups, names with startup. It was called Startup Watching. which was a newsletter with, I don't know, like 15,000 subscribers, something like that. And I was running that, sending out two editions twice a week with interesting background stories. So not like tactics and stuff like that, but more like the personal stories of founders and podcasts like this, etc. And eventually also sold that, which was cool. I actually put it up for sale on, I think it was sideprojectors.io. So that's like a place where you can sell your side projects. I thought, okay, well, maybe I should try this out. I'm interested to see if that works. So I eventually sold that too. And at that time, I was working at one of the biggest banks in the Netherlands, actually. And I ended up there because at one point I thought, this is also, by the way, still on the topic of learning, I think. I thought at one point, okay, I've seen this like technology or startup world from different angles. So from the next web to an investor, to building something myself, to getting a behind the scenes look at a Silicon Valley startup at Product Hunt. I worked there as a community manager, to also having my own company, which was a marketing agency. That's another story. But at one point I was like, okay, I think it would be super valuable to work at a corporate. Like, what would it be like to work at a corporate company, but then like on the innovation side? So everyone has like their opinion about corporates and stuff. And I thought, okay, I want to just experience it. And if it's awful, I'll just leave after a month or 3 months or whatever. But I just want to experience it. And my biggest assumption here was startups, three guys in an attic or in a garage, they know how to build a product. But then the distribution part is the hardest, right? Like, who cares that they made a thing? And I thought with corporates, it's kind of the other way around. So for example, this big bank has 3 million clients, and you can segment those clients any way you want, right? From, I don't know, super rich families with 4 kids till single moms in the suburbs or whatever. Like, you can segment and find people that you could build products for. But I thought, okay, well, how do you build a product as fast and lean as people in a startup would do within a big corporation like this? And so I thought the answer to that is it's impossible. I later found out it's pretty much impossible, or at least really, really hard. But yeah, I ended up working as like a startup slash innovation coach at this bank. And eventually I stayed for a year. And it was super, super interesting to learn about like this whole, you know, new type of environment, meeting super smart people. And yeah, it was just super interesting. Just another dynamic of this whole internet and technology world. So it was super interesting. And then after spending a year there, I took 18 months off to be a stay-at-home dad, take care of my kid. And like 6 months ago, I started working on new stuff again. And that eventually is also when I launched my new course.
So yeah. You take 18 months to focus on the most important thing in life, which is raising a family. What was one of the first things you built coming out of like a hiatus?
Yeah, it was actually getting started again with the course. So the course idea is more than 2 years old. At one point on Product Hunt, I found car.co, which is now, I think, a well-known website builder, especially in the no-code space. And been in touch with AJ, the creator of it, basically from the start. Like, I just fell in love with his product. And so I use that a lot. I think I can consider myself a pro in Car. But when I discovered that you could combine it with Zapier and Airtable, and then of course through Zapier with all these other tools, that's when it really clicked for me that my point of view around product development, lean startup, but then combining that with these tools that are now, you know, more accessible than ever, that really led me to the idea of creating a course where my primary goal was to get like all of the stuff that's in my head and mold that into some sort of shape. And that shape turned out to be the course that I now created. So I started working on it before our son was born, but only like 6 to 8 months ago, I had again the new time to focus on really building it out, creating all the lectures, taping all the videos, editing all the videos, and then figure out how to launch it.
What's the course called as a product?
Yeah, the course as a product is called No Code MVP. And so people can find that at nocodemvp.com. And I used Cart, obviously, and Airtable and Zapier to build the homepage, so nocodemvp.com. But the actual course is hosted on a tool called Podia, which people can find at podia.com. And there are like several like platforms that you can use to host your course. And also there are platforms that help you do marketing of the course, etc. Like they have their own marketplace. But first I wanted to try to see if I can do all that stuff myself. So I used Podia, which is amazing value for money. I'm super happy with them.
That's good. I want to actually kind of bring something around. And I'm listening to your story and there are a couple key learnings. Number one is you wanted to solve a problem that was personal to you. Number two was you asked the question, thinking of how to figure it out, not worrying about how hard it was going to be, but you were going to learn something in the end. And number three, what I've noticed, it's kind of like this new stage that you're at, is you filled your cup with so much knowledge and experience building and going through all these different stages in your journey. Now you're trying to pour it out. Does that make sense?
Yes, that's exactly it. But it's still... I'm just winging it like everybody else, obviously. But I mean, like I'm 32 and I think 10 years ago, I thought the same as a lot of people that are now 22, like I'm going to create one thing and that thing is going to be huge or whatever. But now that I'm super old, I realize that you just have to do a lot of stuff. Like if you do a lot of stuff, you learn a lot of stuff and that eventually will culminate into whatever you're doing at this point in time. And it doesn't mean that you will definitely become successful or something. I wouldn't consider myself super successful, but I learned things that can help me go through ideas faster, stay objective, detach my ego from my actual idea. And I think that's one of the most important things. I think it's about keep going forward and also giving yourself a chance to fail or succeed.
Thank you for saying that. I think the biggest thing I just heard you say that impacted me was kind of how, even though you've learned a lot and you're very well known in the community, how you're still kind of like not winging it, but you're still learning. You're still taking on stuff that you don't know how to do and trying to figure it out. That's great. Let's segue before we get into your latest project. What's the no-code/entrepreneurship scene like in your part of the world? And how could that be similar or different to what you've seen in other parts of the world?
Yeah, I think it's the same as in different parts of the world. I think there's a lot of people that just talk and a lot of people that say stuff that isn't true, but they just act like it. But the vast majority is people that are, you know, also genuinely interested in other people and then sharing their experiences. And that's what I always really liked, especially about the tech entrepreneurship community. And then of course Twitter, I would pay $50 a month for Twitter. Like Twitter has been the tool for me to share what I know and connect with other people, learn from them, all these things. So yeah, I don't know if I have like a super, super special answer to that. I think it's kind of similar. And I don't really look at the local space, to be honest, because yeah, like I said, most of my time spent is on Twitter, learning from people all over the world. And the fun thing here is that it can be from a company, but it can also be from one person who lives in a random town in whatever country. That doesn't really matter nowadays.
Got it. So I guess what you're alluding to is like you have the things you want to do, you have the resources to do it, but an important aspect you're mentioning is finding the right community. So it doesn't have to be a physical one. It can be like Twitter, which is a digital community.
Yeah, I think I'm on Twitter for like 11 years now or something. I don't know how many people I follow. I think like 3,000. And I think like
90% of those are like super curated. Over that decade, I just created my own channel of information and people I look up to or find interesting. And I think that is something that can be super valuable, maybe not only Twitter, but also blogs that you read or podcasts that you listen to. And I think that's a very important aspect, because you can of course also interact with podcast creators or people that write blog posts. So it doesn't have to be all on Twitter. You can email people obviously to get in touch and learn from them. But yeah, I think for me, my personal Twitter curation is one of the best things I did, super unconsciously, by the way. But it, yeah, after all those years, you personalize that to yourself, of course.
Yeah, that makes sense. Let's quickly kind of get up to your latest project. I'm looking at your product hunt right now. And in between, you had other products you created. So you had Mailbook, you had Road to Scale. And then I think recently, my startup name. Yeah. Can you briefly talk about those three, the stack and like what it solved?
Yeah, so I really like the whole curation thing, if you didn't notice. But Road to Scale is basically like Startup Stash, but with content. So more than 300 like articles, blog posts, videos, but then categorized in like the different stages of a startup. So the four stages: coming up with an idea, finding a solution, building the right product, and then scaling. And that was also built with Airtable, Card, Zapier, also to demonstrate you don't need to know how to code to build something valuable, right? And some people say, well, oh, it's just an embedded Airtable on a Card website, but that Airtable holds some value. People can search for stuff, etc. So I think, I don't know, more than 20,000 people use that website. And same for mystartupname.com, which is a PDF guide that helps people in six simple steps to come up with a name for their startup. I think that's also well over more than 10,000 people that used it. Also, same, used Card and Zapier just to build the website. And that's what I really want to show, right? Like, it doesn't have to be a super fancy stack or whatever. The Mailbook one, mailbook.nl, it's a Dutch, I think there's also an English version now. But yeah, I came up with that, was built on my idea. So I helped build the first product. This is fully built with code by a developer friend of mine. And I came up with that product when I got the task to gather all our friends' address info for our birth cards. And so I was texting everyone like, hey, text me your address. And at one point I thought, okay, I'm going to create a card website with a form that puts the address info in a Google sheet. And I sent that card URL to all my friends in WhatsApp, and they filled out the form and it went through to the Excel. And then I thought, okay, this could be a fun product. So eventually we created Mailbook. And what you can do is you can create an account, you get your personal link, you send out that link to whoever you want. These people give your address, and then you can export that as a CSV, but you can also order labels to put on the envelopes or the cards. So I helped to build the first version of the product. We were three guys, one guy is still running it, and I actually saw in the Google Analytics last week that like 70,000 people used it last month. So yeah, super fun to be part of that start.
Tell us about your latest project.
Yeah, so like 3 days ago, I saw a tweet by Alex Taub, who's like a well-known entrepreneur from New York. His Twitter is @AJT. And he replied to people that were talking about websites where technical people or people in the tech space can find jobs. But is there actually like a place with an overview of people that don't have these skills where they can find products or services that they can use to make money on the internet, so legitimate stuff? And it was especially relevant, of course, now with people getting laid off. And so he replied, well, I had this idea years ago, and here's a Google sheet with 100 and something of these places that I already collected. And are there any people who want to take over this idea and maybe turn it into something searchable like a product? And so I was instantly triggered. So I replied to him, and then someone else, Elaine Zelby, she also replied to him, and I actually know her just from something else. So we jumped on it together. And so in 2 days, I created the website and the automation, all that stuff, and she fixed all the content. So today we launched moderndayjobs.com, and it's a curated list, obviously, of 100 like modern ways of things that people can use to make money online, and then especially focused on the more non-technical people that are unfortunately now, you know, losing jobs. And well, I think it won't only be in the US, but probably also a lot of other countries. And so, yeah, we launched that today and on Product Hunt. So it's on Product Hunt, and we're getting a lot of awesome support from people we know on Twitter. But yeah, that's just a fun project. And it's also cool to just show you can go from tweet to a small product within 2 days and then just reach a bunch of people. And that's really what this whole no-code thing is all about, I think.
That's great. Oh, man, that's awesome. What's a question that I haven't asked you that you wish I did?
Oh man, putting me on the spot. And maybe something we talked about off camera, like what's most annoying to you. Yeah, I think it's in line with the lurking stuff. Not that lurking is bad, but I think this time that we live in now is just so awesome. Like you can build stuff, you can share it with anyone in the world, even if it's one song or one beat or one blog post or one product or whatever. But a lot of people are so conscious about what other people think, and you should really just say screw that, I'm just gonna follow this idea and share it with the world and then see what people think. Because I don't know if I have this quote correctly, but if you think other people think of you, you're probably wrong. It's also probably like sign of the times or something, but people should say screw this more, I'm just gonna do it and not talk about it or think about it like endlessly. I'm just going to do it and try it out.
How can the no-code community help you? What can we do to, you know, to add value to you?
Oh, well, I don't know, man. Just keep talking about the power of this stuff. I like this community. It's super open and transparent. Of course, with a growing community, there's always people that are trying to take advantage of that. But we should all just stick to our plan and our belief, or at least our enthusiasm about all these tools, and just keep sharing the power and supporting each other.
Who should we invite next to be on Codeless?
I'll definitely talk to Ben. I don't know if you talked to Ben yet.
I look at guests coming on the show. I try to build a relationship, and then we see if coming on the show can work. So yes, I'm working on a relationship.
I'll intro you to Ben, and then it'll hopefully work out.
That would be great. Yes, that is cool. Okay. How can people reach you, stay in touch, follow you, and learn from you?
Yeah, I think the main spot is Twitter, basically. So my Twitter is at BramK, so BramK. Yeah, that's where I'm most active. And of course, check out nocodemvp.com.
Yeah, we'll definitely include links to all your projects as well as your Product Hunt page. I think what's interesting is not only the products that you've built and kind of where you tend to thrive, but also some of the products that you've recommended. Literally, there have been like two or three tools that I've looked at on your recommendation page that have made the difference between like being in the dark and coming into the light. So one of those was Glimpse.
Yeah, man. Glimpse is amazing.
It is. And then another one was Exploding. I think Exploding Topics was on your page.
Yeah, yeah. But man, that is, it's funny. And maybe that's a cool thing to end with. I actually met Noah of Glimpse in New York last year. And what I think is so cool about that product and also the Exploding Topics one is that you discover stuff that you have no clue about, but it's still super inspirational. So for the people listening, they are like trend reports, like you get an email with trending, well, subjects or products or platforms or services that people all over the world are looking for it or buying it or using it. And sometimes I see things and I'm like, what? And then it gives me the feeling that I've been living under a rock. So it's actually having lunch with Noah And we were talking about funny subjects that they discovered, and he told me about ASMR, and I was like, what is ASMR? And he almost stood up and was like, you don't know what ASMR is? I'm like, oh no, man. But like, that is cool, right? Man, I love that you mentioned those products. I love them too.
Yeah. Bram, listen, it's been awesome talking to you, but even before talking to you, it's been so wonderful learning from you and being able to actually build something from the skills that you're sharing. And I'm cool. Just really excited to be sharing your advice and perspective with the community. And I'm looking forward to you coming back.
Cool, man. Well, thanks also for inviting me. And thanks for the great talk.
All right, man. Take care. All right.
See you. Totally. Cool.
That's it for this episode, but you should stick around after the closing credits to hear Bram's thoughts and predictions on no-code. One note on safety during this COVID-19 pandemic. This stuff is having a huge and real impact on all of our lives, and I hope you're taking all the necessary precautions. I'm in Atlanta, and the governor of my state just issued a stay-in-place order to ensure the health and safety of residents. Please do the same wherever you are. Please rate and review us on your favorite listening platform. It helps us get discovered by more people who want to unlock creativity and accelerate transformation. You can reach me on Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and Instagram through the Codeless Podcast handle. Just search for the words Codeless and Podcast, and you can't miss us. All music provided through the appropriate licensing and permissions. Big thanks for the music to Steph Skilly, Bobby Oddsock, Rmark 1313, Raising Sounds, and prod.nocredit. You can find more information and links in the show notes.
I think I've been looking at no-code tools for the past 3 or 4 years. To me, no-code tools really democratized the creation of products by people that previously weren't able to create these products. And so for me, that is the biggest impact that the no-code MVP tools are having. So not only technical people with ideas can now build products, but also non-technical people with ideas can build products. And that's awesome. My prediction for no-code tools are that they are going to get more and more powerful and also more accessible. But the biggest thing I think that people should take into account is that even if you are able to use no-code tools, you still have to think about, why am I creating this? If you can eventually create anything with no-code tools, it doesn't mean that you also should create everything. So think about that before you start building.